This is the show, Doctor. Doctor, can you help me? And this is the host, Doctor Christian. This is the show, Doctor. Doctor, can you help me? And this is the host, Dr. Christian. The show, Doctor. Doctor, can you help me? Is not a medical show, even though the title may and might indicate something like that. No, the show is much broader than medical. We handle medical issues, but we don't give medical guidance to you. You cannot follow medical guidance given by anybody else but by your doctor, by your private physician, because only your physician knows your situation. And sometimes they don't know either. So we cannot certainly know your situation. We give you this information as a science information and as a motivation and as an inspiration for a better life. The topic of this show is life, everything possible. Follow the information what you get from here. This is a marvelous, marvelous material every show. We have done it all soon, like 8-9 years, and we're going to be going on 80-90 years. Even after I've gone, we go through the same material and give you information in a nutshell what is important in life. In case you want to study and hear a similar podcast that is put on the internet handling biblical success law issues, we have an associated church, Global Church of God, and its website is similar to our website. Producer of the show, Dr. Can you help me? Is Save the American Family Organization, website is www.sdaf1.org.com. I say it so fast because I know that you must know, otherwise you will hear already listen to this. But the associated biblical church is very similar, www.gcg1.org.weebly.com. The GCG means Global Church of God. And there, if you want to study the material based on that website, start from there in Successology Successology tab. Towards the end, there are 101 scientific evidences for you to study and for your family to study. That shows the biblical text being written by, dictated by God and not by human beings. But this shows, Doctor, can you help me, is a science and motivational show, and also teaches how to invest. As I mentioned, the topic of this show is life. Briefly, before we go to today's topic, have a family meeting where everybody is present, including all your babies also, and toddlers, so that they learn this kind of family meeting exists and how it changes life, how it can make your life better. Yes, have a weekly meeting, 2 to 3 hours long, or 1 to 2 hours long, depending on your situation, but the longer the better, but no more than 3 hours. 2 hours might be maybe very, very suitable, but you decide. In that meeting, you handle, discuss the material that everyone has studied during the past week, that you decided first what you all will study, and then you go through the material. In our website, start from that tab that states as a title, Services, and go there, Restoring Any Marriage, tab, a sub tab. That's the family tab. And then take material. If you want to study the biblical material, take then some material from the related, it's our affiliated organization, take material from the Bible based on their advice. Now, we have a radio show also in that church, so you can listen to that. You can get continuing education, university, and college credits that are free. When you listen to these shows, you have to prove that you listen by taking a test. And then the credits never expire, they're valid worldwide. That's a good deal. Now, today's topic we have how social status affects your health. How social status affects your health. That's a topic that is all the time discussed in our society in America and obviously worldwide today, as our society debates the effects or wealth inequality. We can then understand more and better what this all means when we hear this text that is given by Christopher von Ruden. And he is an assistant professor in the Jepson School of Leadership Studies at the University of Richmond. It's Christopher von Ruden, and a professor. But all this text is put on a website, and it can be found in radio TV shows towards the end. And they have a date, today's date. And then you will have the text placed there. How social status affects your health? What is the relationship between social status and health? This is a tricky question. In modern industrialized societies, health certainly improves as you move up the socio-economic ladder. But much of that trend is a result of health care and lifestyle factors like diet, physical activity, etc. And those are associated with income, not relative social position per se. If you want to see how status affects health, you have to isolate status from material wealth. How do we do that? The easiest way is to observe a society in which there is minimal material wealth to contest and where there are limited avenues for status competition. So that is what my colleagues and I did. This is not about me, this writer. This is the text by the writer, Christopher von Ruden. So that's what they did. For several years, we studied, he says, the demand forager or horticulturalist of Amazon in Bolivia, a small pre-industrial politically egalitarian society in which status confers no formal privileges such as a coercive authority, as we report in a recent article in the journal Evolution, Medicine and Public Health. We found that even among these people, Simian, is written D-S-I-M-A-N-E, that those are the people, higher status was associated with lower levels of stress and better health. So also there, higher level of status was associated with lower levels of stress and better health. Then, even though they didn't have much wealth to share. So let's go forward in this, but let's first see where this was done as a repetition. So the people who they studied is T-S-I-M-A-N-E, it's another website. The forager horticulturalists in Amazon, Bolivia, they mostly eat, they collect all kinds of material that they find edible, and then they mostly eat what they either cultivate themselves or is grown in their neighborhood, simply vegetables and fruit and similar, or something else also. So let's go. Along the banks of Manicou River, M-A-N-I-Q-U-I, Manicou River, and in adjacent forest, the Chimen, T-S-I-M-A-N-D. Simon, people hunt, fish and plant plantains, rice and sweet manioc, M-A-N-I-O-C. They live in villages that range in size from 30 to 700 people. During these meetings, decision-making is consensus-based. No individual has the right to coerce anyone else. But that doesn't mean there are no established distinctions. When you attend a village meeting, you soon notice that the opinions of certain men are more influential during the consensus building process. These same men are often solicited to mediate disputes or to represent villagers' interests with outsiders. Many Chimene women have a voice in community affairs, but it is rare in such small-scale societies for women to have equal status on average with men. Writer says, my colleagues and I measured the social status of all the men from 4 Chimene villages, nearly 200 men between the ages of 18 to 83, by asking them to evaluate one another on their informal political influence. The men also provided urine samples and received medical examinations from physicians associated with the Chimene Health and Life History Project. We found that the Chimene men with less political influence had higher level of the stress hormone cortisol. I repeat, even there, they found that men with less political influence had higher level of stress hormone cortisol, which has many important physiological functions. This result persisted after controlling for other factors that might affect stress levels, including age, body size, and personality. In addition, he found, he says, this Professor Christopher Ruden, and that the less influential Chimene men had a higher risk of respiratory sickness and death in their early death in their society. Let me repeat. They found out that even there where there's not much practical and material wealth to share, but only political strength in decision making is what they share. So they found that the less influential men had a higher risk of respiratory infection, the most common cause of sickness and death in their society. Stress may contribute to this disparity in infection risk, when chronic stress can dampen immune function. Chronic stress can kill. Chronic stress can dampen immune function. That's why it can lead in sicknesses and death. There's also a description. This is my own material added to this text. Definition of stress this way. Stress is unfinished business. Now, stress is unfinished business. First of all, stress causes when you have not finished your work or whatever you are planning to do. That causes stress. But also, stress in this kind of situation when you don't have enough power in society is unfinished business, because a person wants to have the power and is struggling to get there. So it's always unfinished business. So we have to learn to handle the stress, because it's one part of our life. Stress is a good motivator, but it also can kill. If we take it too seriously and let it kill us. This is important information to realize what it means and think about what I was just saying to you. Studying the same individuals over a 4-year period, we also found, says the writer about this text, Professor Christopher von Ruden, over a 4-year period, we also found that for men whose influence declined over time, greater declines were correlated with higher levels of cortisol and respiratory illness. Downward mobility is harmful, it seems, even in that kind of society where there's not much material, money, or similar things to share. Is a political decision-making power what they share or don't have or have, and how much they have or how much they don't have. And that is the same as very similar what we are in our society, when we don't have, when we lack something and we, somebody has more. So let's go forward. Why might low status cause such stress for those people and for anybody? One possibility is that status offers a greater sense of control. Another is that status acts as a form of social insurance. Influential Simon men have more allies and food production partners who can be helpful in mitigating conflict, sickness, and food shortage. The relative lack of such support may cause psychological stress. Our study, Professor Rudens goes on explaining, is limited to adults, yet further studies might examine if childhood has and childhood and adolescence are important periods in Chinese society for establishing the social ties that beget status and regulate stress. Recent studies in industrialized societies have found that adults who experience low socioeconomic status in childhood, so heightened cortisol responses as adults, regardless of their current socioeconomic status. Let me repeat. In America, for instance, if we grow in lack as a child, that burden never goes away, the research shows. Now, it can go away with your own choice. If you don't believe that, that's a different story. I have several different degrees, but I'm also a counselor doctor, and I certainly know how to take those kinds of wrong thoughts away by certain powerful techniques that I have developed myself. Well, I have written about them, and I published material on those topics, but that's another story. But basic things is what I just explained. Basic is what I just mentioned. So, I repeat. Our study, says this Professor Rudin, is limited to adults, yet further studies might examine in childhood and adolescence how important periods in this kind of Chinese society for establishing the social ties is and that begets status of regulate and the regular stress. Recent studies in industrialized societies have found that adults who experience low socioeconomic status in childhood show heightened cortisol responses as adults, regardless of their current socioeconomic status. So showing higher cortisol amount means higher stress. And even though you would be now in a good shape, but in childhood you had experienced lack, you still might have that problem that you have higher cortisol problems leading to sickness. So it is interesting that even in industrialized societies, the test that status comparisons most consequential for psychosocial stress are often among individuals who live near one another or occupy the same social network, not individuals at opposite ends of the socioeconomic spectrum. Let's go on that statement again. It is interesting that even in industrialized societies, the status comparisons most consequential for psychosocial stress are often among individuals who live near one another or occupy the same social network, not individuals at opposite ends of the socioeconomic spectrum. Those living just above the poverty line may resent welfare for those living just below it. And a millionaire may envy a multimillionaire more than he envies a billionaire. Now I think you got it. Of the old body. So, the importance of relative status perception may have its roots in small-scale societies of our ancestors, which were similar to that of the Simane, T-S-I-M-A-N-E, what this professor and his group, Professor Christopher Rudin, studied. And we had study material from there in publication. In such societies, both our political competitors and our cooperative partners were likely individuals with whom we interacted regularly. As our society debates the effects of wealth inequality, the Chinese help us to understand why they care so deeply about relative social positions and why our health depends on it. This is an important article in my understanding to understand what it means, and when you think about what I just explained, what it can mean. We still have some time for a second topic, at least a few minutes. So I mentioned about our USA, totally different topic, USA Postal Service, how mail monitoring rarely is denied postal services. Not only do they monitor our phone calls, not only do they monitor where we live and how we live and this and that, and pick up all kinds of information, what we do and what we don't, but they also monitor our mail. With the modern technology, every piece mail that goes in or out in the postal service is photographed, and is saved forever. So with the modern technology, this can be done. Yes, every piece of mail, who sends what to whom? This is used in fighting terrorism, of course. But every single piece is in every single piece mail that you send, what I send, what anybody sends, is saved the information. Now, this might sound like, oh my gosh, isn't that intruding my privacy? But anyway, Washington gives this kind of information. The United States Postal Service granted almost all of the nearly 6,700 requests from law enforcement agencies last year to monitor the mail of Americans for use in criminal or national security investigations. Postal Service official told a House panel on a meeting where they were questioned about this topic. The official said that only 10 requests had been denied, or this about 7,000 requests. For a rate of approval that some members of Congress sharply criticized. Cases for monitoring are called mail covers, mail covers, because the collected information comes from the outside or letter and parcels. The fact that 99.85% of the mail covers were approved raises a serious questions about privacy and the management of the mail covers program, said a representative Blake Farren told the Texas Republican, who is chairman of the House Oversight and Government Reform Subcommittee responsible for the Postal Service, the panel that heard the testimony. This is an interesting topic. Most people don't know this. The hearing followed a recent data breach by hackers into the Postal Service's computer system and noted by the agency's inspector general that found numerous problems with how the Postal Service runs its mail surveillance program. At the hearing, postal officers sought to assure members of the panel that the agency had adequate controls over the surveillance to protect the privacy and civil liberties of Americans. Guy Cottrell, chief of the Postal Inspection Services, by the way, the text is in our website, in the American Family website, in radio TV shows, and it's dated, and you can find it there, when you find today's date. Guy Cottrell, chief of the Postal Inspection Services, the law enforcement arm of the Postal Service, said the agency had made several changes in the way it managed the mail covers program after the audit in May. The audit found that 21% of law enforcement requests to monitor mail had been approved without written authorization from the proper Postal Service officials, and that 13% had lacked properly the documented explanations for the approval. The audit also found that the postal inspection services had not conducted annual reviews of the mail cover program as required by federal law, and that more than 900 mail covers were still active even though the orders for them had expired. So the mail cover is that they said the computer study every mail that goes through, and then they collect information from the cover of the envelope and save the information. Let's go on. Now, if this time cuts off and we didn't finish this text, the rest of the text will be, and the full text is in our website. So this is important material to know. We had made substantial progress in addressing the issues raised in the audit, Mr. Cottrell told the subcommittee. He provided data showing that the number of mail covers requested by law enforcement agencies had declined to about 6,700 in 2013 from slightly more than 9,400 in 2010. But Mr. Cottrell said the Postal Service's overall use of mail covers, including by its internal law enforcement arm, had jumped to about 57,000 so far this year from about 16,000 in 2012. He said the increase was due to the Postal Inspection Service's use of one-day covers, mostly in cases of suspected drug smuggling through the mail. The one-day covers permit surveillance of the single piece of mail rather than of all the mail going to an individual or business. Another program which is more than a century old, local and federal law enforcement officials sent requests to the Postal Inspection Services to monitor the mail of individuals or businesses suspected of a crime. The inspection service then directs postal workers to record visible external information on mail sent to the target of an investigation, including names, addresses, and postmarks. The process is not subject to judicial review. Law enforcement officials, including Captain Charles A. Hamby, H. of the Prince George County, Maryland Police Department, who testified at Wednesday's hearing in Washington, said that although mail covers are old-fashioned, they can still be critical to investigations. The agency is updating its computer system, Mr. Cottrell said, to make sure its information on its mail cover is accurate, and it is developing a process to bar law enforcement agencies who abuse the program from being approved for mail covers. The Postal Service also uses a program called Mail Imaging, in which its computers photograph the exterior of every piece of the paper mail sent in the United States. The program primarily helps process the mail, but in some cases it allows the enforcement agencies to request stored images of mail sent to and received by people who are under investigation. That's really interesting. Timothy H. Edkan, a visiting fellow at the Watson Institute for International Studies at Brown University, who was the first director of privacy and civil liberties for the National Security Council in the Obama administration, told the panel that the mail imaging program was troubling. It raises real questions about the bulk collection of metadata, raises privacy risks and questions about who has access to this data, he said. I'm sure it does. It's a problematic situation, but it's still something that is being used and done. Well, it will certainly help in criminal research and all kinds of terrorist attacks, certainly. So we certainly understand that we cannot get rid of it. We need it. But does it go too far? And is it used in an illegal manner or not? Does it cause problems to people who haven't done anything wrong? That's a different story. And how is the privacy matters? But anyway, this is an important topic also to know, and most people don't know. But the mail service has improved. We find it very practical. Well, we get mail every day anyway, but if people who have a mailbox get less mail. Nowadays, you can have a free service in your post office box service that you can get either phone call or phone call to your iPhone or any phone, and they leave a message in your message system, or they send an email to you when you have new mail in your box. That helps, especially if you don't get everyday mail. Then you don't have to run around back and forth to see if there's mail, if there's mail, if there's mail. But the whole service actually is based on this mail monitoring system, so it has also some benefits. There are some other services also that are new, but this is an interesting service. And of course, they try to service those people who want to use a post office box because it saves them money and time. They don't have to carry the mail so much home and business addresses. That certainly is good, and it helps you because you have, in most places or many places, you have 24/7 hours access to your mail. And if you don't, find out if your location, if your area will have such access. Well, there are other mailboxes available that are not postal services, that are private mailboxes. Of course, you can do that also. They don't monitor, but sooner or later they will start monitoring also. I'm sure that will happen. So, the time is over soon, and these are our today's topics, important topics. You can get continuing education, university and college credits that are free, valid worldwide, and never expire. Then you register as a listener, and then you take a test that you prove that you have listened. That's all. Now, this whole time is over soon, and this is the show, Doctor, Can You Help Me? And this is your host, Dr. Christian. Until next time. Thank you.